I appreciate so much the opportunity to be with you again. I appreciate the invitation on the part of the brethren asking me to come back. I was here some 5 or 6 years ago, or maybe longer. I'm not sure exactly the year. Jim and I were talking earlier. We think it was 06 when I was here. We'll look forward to being with you this week and to spend some time with you and studying about things that have to do with serving God and going to heaven. We'll say more about the topics a little bit later, but it's good to be with you. It's good to be in the home of Glenn and Kathy Price. I got settled in there last evening and look forward to being with you and spending some time with Jim this week and having a good week together, we hope. If I were to ask you the question, what is happening to your ox? How would you answer that question? How would you respond to that? If I were to walk up and say, what's happening to your ox? You probably would respond by saying, I didn't know I had an ox. But you do, in the sense that we're going to talk about this morning. As you ponder that question, let's think a little bit about the fact that God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. Let's open our Bibles over to the book of Exodus, chapter 20, if you will, and I want you to notice how strict God was concerning the Sabbath law. The text says, in 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. You nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger who is with you within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. God had a strict law concerning the Sabbath. God said, don't work any on the Sabbath day. And what I mean, don't work on the Sabbath day, you can't work, your children can't work, your servants can't work, nor can your cattle, nor can your ox, nor anybody work on the Sabbath day. God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. Go 3 chapters later to the 23rd division of the book of Exodus, beginning at verse 12. And we see the same kind of thing. 6 days you shall labor and do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and your son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. And in it, in all that I said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. How strict was God's law? Well, he added a point here that not only could you not work, nor could your servant work, but even the son of your servant cannot work on the Sabbath day. Well, let's go one more time to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5, beginning at verse 12. God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your manservant and maidservant may rest as well as you. You can't even let your ox work on the Sabbath day. God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. I want you to notice in all three of those readings, in Exodus 20, Exodus 23, and Deuteronomy 5, and all of those references where God had this very strict law concerning the Sabbath, there wasn't a mention at all of an ox being in the ditch, was there? Not one time was there said anything about the ox being in the ditch. It was Jesus who brought that point up in Luke, the 14th chapter, so I encourage you to turn with me to Luke chapter 14, beginning at verse 1. It happened that as he was in the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, this was the very day where God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath, that they watched him closely. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus answered and spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Notice Jesus raises that question to them. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Well, that was painted and with the backdrop and the canvas of God had a very strict law concerning the Sabbath. But they kept silent, and he took him and healed him and let him go. Jesus healed on the Sabbath. And he answered and said to them, which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into the pit, the King James says the ditch, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they could not answer him regarding these things. See what Jesus just said to them? Yes, there is a very strict law concerning the Sabbath over here, but I'm going to heal this man on the Sabbath, and you would do the same kind of thing if it were your donkey or if it were your ox, if he fell into the ditch on the Sabbath day. You'd lift him out, is what you would do. Well, another occasion. Matthew chapter 12. It's a little reverse this time. That as they departed from there, they went into the synagogue, and there was a man there who had a withered hand. And they ask him, the question is reversed this time. They come to Jesus asking, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Then the text adds this qualifying statement. They did that they might accuse him. And he said to them, what man is there among you, if he had one sheep, if he falls into the pit on the Sabbath, they would not lay hold of him and lift him out? Of how much more value is a man than sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And then he said to the man, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it out and was restored whole as the other. And the Pharisees went out and plotted how that they might destroy him. What is Jesus doing? He's healing on the Sabbath day. Now let's go back and look at Luke chapter 13. Back a chapter earlier than our text in Luke chapter 14. That's where we're going to come back to in Luke 14 in a moment. Put your finger there and go back up one chapter now to Luke chapter 13. The occasion that's set here is that in verse 14, the prior verse to the verse that's on the screen before you, the ruler of the synagogue said, 6 days, and I'm paraphrasing, you have 6 days in which to heal. Heal on one of those days and don't do that on the Sabbath. And Jesus responds to him, verse 15 says, hypocrite. You are a hypocrite if you say that. Does not each one of you on the Sabbath day loose his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? If your ox needed to be watered, wouldn't you water him on the Sabbath day? And the answer is, yes, we would. Then why can't I heal on the Sabbath day? Let's go back to Luke 14 now. And I want you to notice something in the context. It was Jesus who raised the question about an ox falling into the ditch on the Sabbath day. I want you to notice that the Pharisees did not disagree with him. What Jesus said to them was, if the ox fell into the ditch on the Sabbath day, you would go lift him out on the Sabbath day, and that's what you would do, wouldn't you? If Jesus had contradicted the tradition of the Pharisees, don't you know the Pharisees would have come along and said, now, wait a minute, Jesus. You know you've never seen a Jew or a Pharisee or a lawyer or any kind of person among the Jews ever go on the Sabbath day and lift the ox out of the ditch. They did not disagree with Jesus. Furthermore, I want you to notice that his point was, you are inconsistent. What Jesus is saying, that this is not a violation of the Sabbath law. When I heal on the Sabbath, that did not violate that strict Sabbath law, nor did you violate it when you lift the ox out of the ditch or lift the donkey out of the ditch or lead the ox or the donkey to the water and water him on the Sabbath day. That is not a violation of the Sabbath. The point is, you are inconsistent in that. You will do one thing but not allow me to do the same kind of thing. His point is inconsistency. Jesus is saying there are times when an emergency situation would arise, you take care of that circumstance, and you still observe the Sabbath. That was his point. Let's talk about this ox falling into the ditch principle for a little bit this morning. And what I want to suggest to you is that we often appeal to that principle to exempt our responsibility. We'll either quote the statement, the ox in the ditch of Luke chapter 14, and that's the passage we're referring to when we do that, or at least we appeal to the idea. And it comforts us to somehow think that this is just one of those times where the old ox just fell into the ditch. We're exempt from our responsibilities because, you see, we just had the old ox to fall into the ditch. And we use that principle to exempt us from our responsibility. So let me raise the question, how do we use the ox in the ditch principle often? Well, here's a number of ways in which we do that. We do that with our attendance. Maybe someone misses several of the services more than just a few occasions. And when you begin to inquire what's going on with your life, well, they may not word it this way, but basically their statement is, the old ox just fell into the ditch, you see. We just had some of those situations to arise where we can't really serve the Lord like we'd like to because the old ox fell into the ditch. More about that in a moment. We do that with our Bible study. I would have been prepared for Bible class. I would have been prepared to teach this morning. I would have been prepared to answer that question. But you see, we had several things come up, and really what happened was the old ox fell into the ditch. Can you see how we use that principle? We may not use that expression, but we're doing the same kind of thing. We may do it with our matter of prayer. Normally, I would pray more. I would be more dedicated and pray more often. But you see, I've been so busy. There's been things in my schedule that have taken up so much time. Well, really what happened was the old ox fell into the ditch. We do that with other things, like maybe the husband and wife relationship. We haven't had time to be together. We haven't had time to bond our relationship. We don't have time to spend together and have a close relationship like we should because, well, really what happened is the old ox fell into the ditch. We do that with rearing our children. Normally, we wouldn't allow my children to do this. We would not tolerate this kind of behavior, but things have been going on wherein we have had the old ox fall into the ditch. And in each one of those situations,
we're saying, my situation is different. My situation is different. God expects you to fulfill your responsibility, but you see, my ox fell into the ditch and I'm exempt from my responsibilities, you see. You're expected to attend, but I am not expected to attend tonight because the ox will be in the ditch. So let me raise again the question in light of that principle. Makes a little more sense now, doesn't it? When I ask you, what's happening to your ox? What's happening to your ox? Does your ox seem to keep falling into the ditch? And some people, their ox is always in the ditch. Does your ox keep falling into the ditch? Does your ox seem to stay in the ditch? I know of some folks who have an ox in the ditch and they can't ever seem to get him out. And then furthermore, let me ask you, what have you done to try to keep your ox out of the ditch? So what's happening to your ox? Does he keep falling there quite often? Does he seem to stay there? And are you doing anything to prevent him from falling into the ditch so that it doesn't happen that way? What's happening to your ox? You have one now, don't you? Are you keeping him out of the ditch? Three things we want to notice this morning. Let's start with this. Let's talk about the principle of the ox falling into the ditch. The emphasis is on falling. The ox falling into the ditch. What I want you to see is that Jesus set forth a principle that there is a legitimate time and there is a legitimate circumstance wherein the ox may fall into the ditch. Turn back to Luke 14 and list in your mind, if not turning there in the text itself. And I want you to notice that in verses 1 through 6, particularly verses 5 and 6, Jesus set forth this principle that there is a legitimate time when the ox does fall into the ditch. That does happen. Several things I want you to observe about that passage. You can skim through that passage as we think about it and see if I'm not correct about that. First of all, as I peruse through Luke chapter 14, verses 1 through 6, it didn't seem to be a thing that was planned. I don't see any indication that there is on the regular basis of the Jews saying, you know what, this is Friday and tomorrow is Sabbath. It's Sabbath. It slipped up on us here. And I'll tell you what, if that ox is going to be in the ditch, we better be getting him out there if he's going to be there on the Sabbath. They don't seem to plan that. Here's another thing. It didn't seem to be a regular thing. Nor did it seem to be a thing that was permanent and ongoing. No indication that it happens all the time. It doesn't seem to be a thing that was common, but rather rare. What would be the chance if your ox fell into the ditch every week? You could just count every week he's going to be in the ditch. What would be the chance that that would always fall on the Sabbath? Wouldn't you think once in a while it happened on Friday? And once in a while, it might happen on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, on some other day of the week, that every time it happens, it's always on the Sabbath day that he fell into the ditch. Didn't seem to be a common thing, but rather rare. Nor did it seem to be a thing that it took all day so that you could not observe the Sabbath. The very point Jesus is making in Luke 14 is that I am not violating the strict Sabbath law, nor are you when you lift your ox out of the ditch. So that tells me it wasn't a thing that took all day of trying to coach him out so that they could not observe the Sabbath. It didn't seem to take all day to do that. And furthermore, it did not seem to be a welcome thing, but rather something you'd want to avoid. I can't imagine a Jew getting up on the Sabbath day and looking out and seeing out in the street and there in the ditch, there's his ox and saying, well, great, this is exactly what I was looking for. I was hoping he'd be in the ditch this morning. Not a welcome thing. You think about those principles in light of Luke chapter 14, and let's notice a contrast. Do you see that sometimes when we get our ox in the ditch, it's something that we have planned and scheduled in contrast to it not being planned? That we plan and schedule things that put our ox in the ditch. Or quite often we have people where their ox is always in the ditch. It's always there. In contrast to it not being a regular thing. For some, it continues for years. And it happens all the time. And they're hindered from worship. And they're not bothered by it at all. And all of that is in direct contrast with what I saw in Luke chapter 14. I don't know how it is here in the church here at Somerset, but where I preach, we have some folks, when we have a gospel meeting, that you can just count on that every time we have a gospel meeting, if you ask them on Sunday morning, are you going to be here every service? They would be offended and say, well, sure, I'm going to be here every service. But you can mark it down. They'll miss three or four services before the week is over. And every time they've had an ox in the ditch. Every meeting. They always do. Every time. You can count on it. Every time. They'll have an ox in the ditch. They always have an ox in the ditch. And it continues for years and for years. What a contrast between what I see in Luke 14 and what happens to us today. But let's go further. I'm more interested in this principle here, and we'll spend the bulk of our time right here before we get to our third and final point quickly. We've talked about the fact the ox sometimes falls into the ditch, but I want to talk about the ox being helped into the ditch. Jesus said there's a time when the ox does fall in the ditch, but the ox is in the ditch, and the question is, how did he get there? How on earth did he get there? Whose footprints are out there on the side of the road? Is that yours that are right by the ditch? Did you somehow help him into the ditch? Two things I want to notice about that. I want to notice, first of all, that we often create a circumstance and a situation where he's likely to fall into the ditch. You ever see that? Let's imagine a Jew. Can you imagine in under the old covenant a Jew that he digs a ditch on Friday, carelessly leaves the gate unlocked, and he may even lead the ox out to the road and leave him standing there, and then get up on the Sabbath day and he scratches his head and says, you know what, I can't figure out why that ox keeps getting in the ditch. This is a problem I've got, and I can't figure this out. Every time I dig a ditch on Friday, leave the gate unlocked, and then lead him out there to the road and leave him standing there, he finds his way into the ditch every Sabbath. I don't get it. Can you imagine? And we have members of the church that scratch their head and wonder, I don't understand why we have so many conflicts, and yet they create circumstances by their carelessness wherein they create a conflict. It might be with school. It might be with sports. It might be with their jobs. It might be with their hobbies. They carelessly create a circumstance where he's likely to fall into the ditch. I was in a meeting one time several years ago when I'd announced my topics on Sunday morning, what was going to be for the week, and about Tuesday night I had an evening meal with a family that, as we sat around the table, they told me, Brother Ray, we sure would like to hear that lesson on Thursday night. We heard that you were going to preach on whatever the subject was, and we sure wished we could hear that, but we're not going to make it Thursday night. And so I inquired, well, why can't you be there Thursday night? Well, we've bought tickets to the basketball tournament. And that cost us $50, and if we don't go, we'll lose our $50, and we didn't know that was the same week of the meeting. And so if we'd have known that, we wouldn't have bought our tickets, but we bought tickets for the basketball tournament, and we'll miss the meeting on Thursday night. Can you see through their carelessness and their scheduling that they created a circumstance where their ox fell into the ditch that could have been avoided? I mean, we do that quite frequently. But there's another thing I want to talk about. And that is, as we talk about the ox being helped into the ditch, sometimes we create a circumstance where he's likely to fall, but more often than that, sometimes we just push him into the ditch. Because we've got a concept that if the ox is in the ditch, that's a justifiable reason not to observe the Sabbath, speaking from the vantage point of the Jew. So if I can get that ox in the ditch, that gives me a justifiable reason. Sometimes we push that ox in the ditch. How so? Sometimes we deliberately create a circumstance where we could have done better. We schedule to work, and we don't try to get off. I've always been appreciative of those Christians who, when they take a job interview, that they say, you know what, I'm going to be in worship on the Lord today, and I don't work on Sunday. And I want to try to be off. I'll work early. I'll work late. I'll swap schedules. I'll do whatever it takes. But I'm going to worship the Lord. And they're trying to keep their ox out of the ditch. I want you to understand something as I talk about working on the Lord's day. I'm not saying it's always wrong to work, but let me illustrate that with a doctor. I've known of doctors who are Christians. There's a difference in a doctor working on Sunday because he had an emergency surgery to arise. I've been preaching, and when a doctor would get a pager go off and he goes out and he doesn't come back during the whole service. He had to go deliver a baby. I've been preaching when a doctor would get a call and he has to go do emergency surgery. Been a wreck on the highway and they had to go in and save someone's life. I understand that. But can you see that's a far cry from the doctor who schedules doctor's visits and office visits on the Lord's day because that works better for him and he can make a little more money? Or volunteering, he's going to work at the emergency room because that's good pay, maybe for the weekend, and he volunteers that I'll do that. Doesn't matter about worship, I'll do that on the Lord's day. There's a far cry from that and an emergency circumstance arising where he has to work on the Lord's day. Quite often we make plans that we know will keep us from worship. We make choices that we know that'll put our ox right in the middle of the ditch. We know that when we make those choices. So I ask you again, what's happening to your ox? Let's talk about our attendance for a little bit. What's happening to our attendance? I don't know what's going on here, but a number of places where I go, I see an attendance problem, a problem that drops off from Sunday morning to Sunday night to Wednesday night. And that kind of varies and goes in a cycle sometimes where I'm preaching, and we're in a cycle right now where our Wednesday night attendance is down a little bit. Let me ask you a question. If this were a Bible class typically conducted and I was asking for interaction, and I were to ask you the question, what reasons are legitimate reasons for missing worship services? What would you put down on your paper? Write down legitimate reasons. What would be legitimate reasons that you would put down? This is a legitimate reason for missing the services. And when you get through writing whatever number, you might have one, you might have a dozen, whatever you've got. The second question is, then, how do you know that's accepted? How do you know? How do you know? And while you ponder those, let me suggest to you that our excuses often become accepted. How so? Well, you probably would put down sickness as a reason, wouldn't you? Like we all would. Can you see that because sickness is an accepted reason, that breeds acceptance of the concept that any ailment or any pain justifies me not being in the worship assembly of the Lord? We've all accepted sickness as a legitimate reason, okay. We think then, and we jump from that over, do some mental gymnastics, and jump over to the fact that that means that any time I have an ailment or a pain or anything that might be labeled as, quote, sickness, that's a justifiable reason. You probably put down work as a reason. All right, let's accept that as a legitimate reason. Because that becomes accepted, can you see, that breeds acceptance of the fact that any job or any reason or anything that needs doing. You say, I don't believe people reason that way. I know they do. Because when I've questioned people about why were you not in the assembly? Quite often they'd say, well, I was doing this to help my family. Maybe it was just working around the house. What's the difference in me working around and planting shrubs around the house on Lord's Day evening and in working over here at the job to make money so I could hire somebody to do that the next day? What's the difference? Because working is a legitimate reason, that breeds acceptance of other things. Can you see that? I want to suggest to you that our announcements sometimes send the wrong signal. Don't misunderstand me. Listen carefully. I'm not being critical of these kind of announcements because I make these announcements myself. But we'll announce that Brother So-and-so is sick tonight, can't be here. And Brother So-and-so or Sister So-and-so is working, and that's the reason for their absence. And so we announce that. And so we inquire a little bit later about, well, what's wrong with Brother So-and-so? Does he have the flu? Do you have virus? Is he in the hospital? What's wrong with him? Well, really, all's wrong with him is he was tired. Had a little dull headache. That's the reason he missed. Well, Brother So-and-so is working. What do you mean he's working? Yeah, I didn't realize they worked on that. Well, he volunteered for overtime. He didn't have to work, but he volunteered for that. And can you see that? With that kind of thing, that breeds this kind of concept that says, don't push yourself, any ailment justifies you missing, and work always justifies missing. It's as if you don't ask any questions if somebody's working, and you don't ask any questions if they say they're sick. There was a number of years ago, there was a lady that was in the congregation where I was preaching. She would miss Sunday morning and Sunday night. And the next Sunday, she'd miss Sunday morning and Sunday night. Then she might be there one Sunday. And then the next Sunday, she'd miss both services. And the elders began to inquire, what's going on here? And come to find out, she had taken a job as a waitress. Nothing wrong with that. And she had to work on the weekends in order to get that job and miss both services. And the elders inquired, do you really have to work and miss the services? Your husband's got a good job. Well, the reason I'm working is so we can have vacations and buy the extras. We can't do all of the things we want to do on his job, but I'm doing this so we can have a finer vacation. I'm willing to miss the worship services of the Lord and not even worship at all so that we can have the finer vacations. I want to suggest you some things. Get your Bible now. Turn with me to the book of Hebrews, if you will. I want to talk about some things that may challenge your thinking. It challenges my thinking on our attendance and about getting our ox in the ditch. When we talk about attendance, one of the first passages that come to mind is Hebrews 10:25, and sometimes we do a textual analysis of that. But I'm more interested in the historical setting of that at this juncture. And what I want to suggest to you is both the textual And the historical setting of Hebrews 10:25 has to do with persecution. Go back to chapter 10. We won't take the time to develop that now. But all through chapter 10, chapter 12, all shows all through the book that the context, the historical context was, there was severe persecution on the part of the Judaizers on these Christians, causing them, that was the very thing, causing them to forsake the assembly. And so it was in that context of persecution, some, notice what the text says in Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. What was that about? Barnes suggests that some may have been deterred by the fear of persecution, as those who were thus assembled were more exposed to danger than others. Arthur Pink says the same thing. So does Robert Milligan. What are they saying? The textual context, the historical context, all argues for what Barnes and Pink and Milligan and all say, that the very thing that was causing some to forsake the assembly was not because they felt sick, not because they had a job, not because they just didn't want to go. They were staying back and not worshiping because they were fearing persecution. Go back to verse 25. See what Paul said. Did he say, well, now, if you're scared to death for your life, or you're afraid your house is going to be destroyed because of being a Christian, or you're thinking maybe they'll beat you because of your allegiance, maybe you better stay at home. He said, don't forsake the assembling. Even in that context, don't do that. When I look at that, that makes things like my little pain or my being tired or my working overtime and making a little extra money pale in insignificance. When in the midst of persecution, they were said to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. That challenges my thinking about keeping my ox out of the ditch. Let's go to Numbers 28 and 29 for a moment. Numbers 28 and 29. You say, what does that have to do with attendance? I want you to look at this word besides. Quite often we think, and here's how we reason. We think because God gives us a requirement, that requirement means that I can override another requirement. In other words, oh yes, I know I have to worship and serve God. That's true. But I also have the command to provide for my family, and this providing for my family overrides that one over there. That's not how God's commands work. I want you to notice a word, an important word in Numbers 28 and 29. This will be an interesting study if you'll do this a little further. I want you to notice that God had offerings to be offered. Look at verse 10. This is the burnt offering for every Sabbath. Here's your word. Besides the regular burnt offering. What does it mean, besides? You have this burnt offering. Now here's another burnt offering, but this one is besides that one. Don't neglect that one just because you're doing this one. Notice again, drop down to verse 15. That as you offer one kid goat for a sin offering shall be offered besides the regular burnt offering. Look at verse 24. This will be offered besides the regular burnt offering. Then again at verse 31, the word besides. And all through chapter 29, besides, besides, besides. The point is, God gave you the command to assemble, and God also gave you the command to work, but that one is besides that one over there. You still have that one to fulfill. We have to figure out a way to do both. That challenges my thinking. Here's something else challenges my thinking. I'll tell you a story about, this is a true story of some brethren who are now living in Colorado, a man and a woman, husband and wife. He was, this was in the mid-80s, the men's national archery champion. She was the women's national archery champion. Those who knew them said if they would go to the Olympics, if they would just go to the Olympics, there is no question they both would walk away with a gold medal. You know what a gold medal means? That could be commercial endorsement. That could be money. That could be big money. Big money. If you finally get a gold medal, finally. They were great. They were the best in their fields. The tryouts for the Olympics, wouldn't you know it, were on Wednesday night. What would you have done? You might argue, and rightfully so, that's a job. And this could lead to bigger money than working at the factory and da 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 da. And so consequently, that's justified. That's not even my question. What would you have done? I'll tell you what they did. They said, forget the Olympics. We're going to be in Bible study on Wednesday night.
And for 20-something years since, brethren who've known them have been telling that story all along. Had they gone, got the gold medal, do you think we'd be telling much about that story? I wouldn't.
I mentioned them to say that that challenges my thinking about my ox being in the ditch. Here's another thing that challenges my thinking. Several years ago, there was a man I had breakfast with during a meeting in Alabama, northern Alabama. Somewhere in the conversation, I detected that he had not been a Christian but a few years, and he was probably past retirement age at that time, and he had not been a Christian for very many years. And so I asked him, how did you get to know the gospel and how did you become a Christian? He said, that's an interesting story. He said he had a business. Somehow involved in the business, they had to load railroad cars. Normally they didn't work on Sunday. He was not a Christian. And one Saturday he calls all his men together and said, we have a big shipment going out and it's got to be loaded on Sunday. And everybody's got to show up. And if you don't show up for work tomorrow, you'll be fired. No questions asked. Everybody works on Sunday. And he said, I dismissed my men. And he said, I had one man come up to me and say, well, just go ahead and fire me now, because I won't be here tomorrow. I'll be worshiping God. And he said, my question was, what's so important about this man's religion that he was willing to give up a job just to worship on that one day? Didn't ask him to miss all of his Sundays, just miss that Sunday. Or he'd lose his job. And he said, fire me now. And so I began to ask him about his religion, and he said he began to tell me about his religion and about the Lord. And because he stood up to me and refused to work for me on Sunday, he converted me. And his comment to me was, had he worked that Sunday, I would not be a Christian now. That challenges my thinking. That challenges my thinking. Now, let's talk about a third thing. You know, sometimes the ox does just fall into the ditch. We cannot help that. Jesus acknowledged that, Luke 14. Sometimes we kind of create a situation where he's likely to fall, and then we scratch our head and wonder what's going on. But often we push him and shove him there. Here's the third thing I want us to talk about. What are you doing to keep your ox out of the ditch? What are you doing to keep your ox out of the ditch? Let's list some things. What will keep your ox out of the ditch? Well, in the 5 minutes we've got remaining, let's quickly list some things. First of all, remember your purpose in life. Ecclesiastes is a whole study within itself, but when we come to the end of the book, the purpose of our life is to fear God and keep His commandments. You keep your focus on what your purpose is. We're not living here on earth to make money. We're not living here on earth to make a living. We're living here on earth to serve God. We make a living so we can accomplish that goal of fearing God and keeping His commandments. If I keep that as my focus, that helps keep my ox out of the ditch. Let's look at Luke chapter 9 quickly. In Luke chapter 9, keep your priorities straight. How so? Well, remember Jesus called some to be His disciples, and one said, let me first go bury my father, the text says. And Jesus said, let the dead bury their dead. In other words, yes, I'll follow you, but I have... He didn't have his priorities together. Let the dead bury the dead. There's a priority of following the Lord. Get your priorities straight. Get your priorities straight. Get your priorities straight. That keeps your ox out of the ditch. Here's a third thing. Sacrifice more to serve God. Be willing to make a sacrifice. Remember the parable of the hidden treasure? When a man found the treasure hidden in the field, he goes and sells all that he has to buy that field. What I learned from that, if I don't learn anything else, that there is no price too great to pay for the kingdom. If it means I lose some money, if it means I lose that $50 I bought on those tickets or $500 on that trip, whatever it may be, to serve the Lord, it's worth every price I have to pay. If I lose relationships in order to serve God, it's worth the price. Be willing to sacrifice to serve God. Seek wisdom. Look at Proverbs 22 and verse 3 quickly. Proverbs 22, if you will, in verse 3. Seek wisdom to foresee the conflict. We'll talk about wisdom in our study this evening. But notice Proverbs 22 and in verse 3. The text says, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. Wisdom looks down the line and says, you know what? If I do this, that may create a conflict, and I want to avoid that conflict. So I want to check about things ahead. Use some wisdom in making your decisions. And consider the consequences if you don't keep him out of the ditch. So what do you mean by that? Well, Jesus made use of the principle of the ox in the ditch. We often abuse that in application. And my point is that children will come loose as a result. Jesus' principle was the old ox sometimes falls into the ditch. We abuse that by saying, you know what, I could push him and help him there just a little bit, and I'm okay. Mark it down. Mark it down. When we do that, our children will go farther and have more ox in the ditch than you can ever imagine.
If you raise your children and your grandchildren and they constantly see you have ox in the ditch all the time, you mark it down, they're going to have a whole herd in the ditch for the rest of their lives, and they'll have more excuses and more problems and more conflicts than you ever dreamed of having, because that's how they were raised and that's what they saw. So if your ox is continually in the ditch, you need to either shoot the ox or you need to fill the ditch. Something needs to be done if your ox is in the ditch. So again, I ask you, what's happening to your ox? Makes a little more sense now, doesn't it? Does your ox keep falling into the ditch? Does he stay in the ditch? Are you pushing him there? What are you doing to keep your ox out? I appreciate your attention this morning.